Welcome to the deep dive. You're here because you want to understand the crucial elements of complex topics, you know, without getting lost in the weeds, and that's exactly what we deliver. This time, you shared a really illuminating chapter with us, all about what makes interim supportive housing projects actually work on the ground.
Yeah.
And what became immediately clear was the absolutely, well, foundational role played by these organizations we call service providers.
That's right. When we think about tackling homelessness, the focus often goes straight to the physical structures, the buildings.
Right, the housing itself.
Exactly. But this chapter brilliantly illustrates that the buildings are just, well, the starting point.
Okay.
The real engine of successful transition, you know, the ongoing support that empowers people to move out of homelessness for good. That's overwhelmingly driven by these service providers.
So that's what we're digging into today.
Yeah, our goal today is to drill down into who these organizations are, what their core functions really entail, and critically, why their effectiveness is just so utterly vital.
Okay, so let's get into it then. Who exactly are these service providers? It sounds like they're distinct entities, not typically direct arms of local government.
Precisely. These are generally third-party organizations. Cities and counties, they typically have a formal process. Often it's a request for proposal, an RFP.
Right, I've heard of the...
Yeah, they use that to identify, select, and then financially support these specialized providers. The material you sent even gives a tangible example. Home First.
Ah, yes, I saw that. And there was a link, too.
Right, if people are interested in looking into their specific work.
Okay, so the local authority chooses them, funds them. But it feels like it's clearly more than just a contractual thing, right? The chapter really seemed to emphasize their unique position.
Absolutely. They occupy this fascinating kind of dual role, which I think is a real key to understanding their importance.
Okay, dual role. How so?
Well, on one side, they are essential partners for city and county managers, you know, striving to achieve those homelessness reduction targets. They're the ones actively implementing the strategies on the ground.
Got it. They execute the plan.
But simultaneously, and this is crucial, they possess these deep and established connections within the community. Their daily frontline work builds trust.
Trust with who, specifically?
With individuals experiencing homelessness, definitely, but also with local residents and even with businesses in the area.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting, I think. This bridging role you're describing, that sounds like a huge strategic advantage. They're not just go-betweens. They're almost like linchpins connecting these different groups who might otherwise have very different, maybe even conflicting views on these projects.
Exactly right. They cultivate this... nuanced understanding. They get the priorities and pressures facing government officials, the legitimate concerns of neighborhood residents and business owners.
Right.
And crucially, the very real needs and challenges facing the individuals they're serving. This unique vantage point lets them offer insights, find common ground in ways that might not be obvious to others.
And it's not just about understanding these different viewpoints, is it? The material also mentioned their extensive networks. It's bigger than just the individuals they directly help.
Oh, absolutely. Not at all. Their long-term presence, their work within the community, means they've built relationships across a whole range of sectors.
Like who?
Well, they have contacts within local government, naturally. They collaborate regularly with other nonprofits, and they have established connections with key community leaders.
Okay.
This robust network becomes incredibly valuable. It lets them facilitate introductions, maybe unlock access to resources that might otherwise be out of reach,
right,
and really effectively advocate for their programs and the people they support.
Wow. So they can even play a role in like shaping public opinion.
Right.
And maybe influencing policy down the line. That sounds like a significant level of influence.
It really is. Their credibility, which is built through that consistent on-the-ground work,
yeah,
and the compelling stories of positive change they can share, that can be incredibly powerful.
Powerful.
In shaping how the public sees these initiatives and in, you know, drumming up crucial support for their ongoing efforts, which, as the material points out, is often essential for getting approvals and, importantly, sustained funding.
Okay, so we have a clearer picture of who these service providers are, these well-networked, community-integrated organizations. But let's circle back to why their success is such a fundamental priority. Why is it so critical for these interim housing projects?
Well, simply put, they're the ones who handle the day-to-day operations. They are the engine room, really, of these interim housing sites.
The engine room. I like that.
Think about it. Someone needs to be there, making sure the facilities are safe, well-maintained, and that there's a sense of structure, of stability. That's the service provider.
And they're also the main contact point for the residents themselves, the people moving into these interim homes.
Precisely. They manage the whole initial intake process, helping people settle in, become familiar with their new surroundings. And critically, they also provide case managers. These are the dedicated individuals who work directly, one-on-one almost, with the residents.
Offering support and guidance.
Exactly. Consistent support, guidance, and helping them navigate the often really complex systems they need to access.
So these case managers, they work for the service provider organization.
Yes, that's usually how it works. And these case managers are absolutely instrumental. They develop and implement individualized resident programs.
Tailored to each person.
Right. They work to understand the unique needs of each person and then connect them with those vital support services we mentioned earlier.
Like mental health care, medical care.
Yeah, access to mental health, physical medical care, job training, employment opportunities, and even help getting essential legal documents, things like ID, birth certificates.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that can be a huge barrier.
Absolutely. Those things can be enormous obstacles for individuals experiencing homelessness.
It really sounds like they're juggling a lot, often maybe with limited financial resources. The chapter noted they frequently maximize their impact despite budget constraints. How do they pull that off?
Yeah, that speaks directly to those established community relationships we talked about.
Ah, the networks again.
Exactly. There's specialized expertise in this field too, and often just sheer resourcefulness in developing innovative solutions. They know which organizations to partner with, where to find, say, in-kind donations or volunteer support.
Okay.
And how to strategically allocate their resources to get the biggest bang for their buck, basically.
Right. This leads us naturally to the practical side. How do these providers actually get involved? The selection, the funding? The chapter says municipalities handle this.
That's correct. The local government, whether it's city or county level, is responsible for identifying and then entering into a contract with the service provider when they believe has the necessary capacity and, you know, demonstrated expertise.
Expertise to effectively serve the future residents.
Exactly.
The interim housing site. And it sounds like getting these providers involved early is really key. What's the benefit of bringing them in sooner rather than later?
Well, the material you sent really emphasizes the value of first understanding who might ultimately be operating the site and then establishing a working relationship with them as early as you possibly can.
Why so early?
Because this proactive engagement allows for really valuable collaboration right from the start. For instance, getting their input during the site planning phase. That can be incredibly beneficial.
How so?
Well, they bring firsthand experience, a practical understanding of what works best in a supportive housing setting, knowledge that maybe architects or city planners might not inherently have.
Right, the practical on the ground perspective. So it's not just handing them a finished plan and saying, here you go, run this.
Not if you want a truly effective and sustainable partnership. The chapter highlights the need for clear project timelines, yes, but also maintaining flexibility.
Flexible how?
Being receptive to adjustments based on the provider's expert guidance. It's about creating a productive feedback loop.
Okay.
Where their on-the-ground knowledge informs the planning and implementation. And things like proactively sharing pre-considered design elements.
Like what?
Like the visibility of cabins for safety and oversight. Sharing that you've thought about that helps build trust. It shows their potential concerns have been considered.
That makes perfect sense. Transparency, collaboration. Now, the material also talks about understanding the specific provider's operational model. What are some key questions municipalities should be asking?
Yeah, that's important. There are several critical aspects. For instance, do they use a behavioral agreement? Sometimes it's called a good neighbor policy.
What does that cover?
It outlines expectations around things like visitor guidelines, noise levels, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And crucially, if they do have a policy like that, will it be shared proactively with the surrounding local community? That can really help address potential anxieties and foster better relationships.
That's a really important point about community relations, yeah? What other parts of their service model are essential to understand?
Well, their established connections to vital external support services are paramount. You need to understand the strength and nature of those relationships.
With medical providers, mental health services?
Exactly. local medical providers, mental health services, job training, and placement programs. How seamless is the referral process for residents? What level of access will people actually have to these essential resources? Resources that are so critical for long-term well-being and stability.
And obviously staffing levels. The support available to residents must be a critical factor.
Absolutely. The material you provided mentions a target case manager to resident ratio. I think it was 1.15 to 1.20.
Something like that, yeah.
So understanding the provider's proposed staffing capacity and ensuring they can realistically meet those kinds of recommended ratios, that's fundamental. It's about providing effective, individualized support.
Okay. Anything else on their model?
One final point is just clarifying their operational protocols. Like, will they offer walk-up services at the site, or is it strictly referral-based?
Ah, managing community expectations.
Precisely. It helps manage expectations within the broader community and just ensures the program operates predictably, as intended.
We touched on community engagement earlier, and the chapter brings it up again, saying service providers often lead community meetings. How can the municipality best support those outreach efforts?
Yeah, the material really emphasizes the need for a strong partnership here. While the service provider might take the lead hosting the meetings, the municipality needs to be actively involved in planning them, offering support by providing, say, relevant data and information, preparing informational materials, maybe even sharing positive testimonials from other successful similar projects. That can significantly boost the effectiveness of these community engagement events, help address concerns or misconceptions head on.
Got it. Now let's shift focus slightly to something absolutely essential for knowing if any of this is working. Metrics. Data.
Critical.
The chapter clearly states that service providers are primarily responsible for collecting and analyzing this vital data. Why is this ongoing tracking so crucial?
Well, this data basically serves as the main lens through which we can understand the program's actual impact.
See what's really happening.
Exactly. It allows us to identify what's working well, pinpoint areas that might need improvement or adjustment, and ultimately demonstrate the tangible value and effectiveness of the project to stakeholders, funders, the wider community.
Makes sense. And the author's organization, Dignity Moves, they work with the providers on this.
Well, they don't handle the data collection directly, but the chapter mentions they work in close collaboration with both the service providers and the municipalities.
To do what?
To ensure that the right key indicators are being consistently measured.
Okay, so what specific types of metrics are we talking about? The chapter outlines several key ones.
Yes, there are several highly informative metrics that are typically tracked. The first is pretty straightforward. Residents served.
Just count.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
A clear count of the number of individuals who've directly benefited from the program's services over a specific period. It gives a fundamental sense of the program's reach, the scale of its impact.
Okay, that makes sense. A basic measure of activity. What's another key metric?
Another really crucial one is transition to stable permanent housing and ongoing services. This gets right to the core objective, right?
Helping people find lasting housing solutions.
Exactly. This metric tracks how many residents successfully move on to permanent housing arrangements, and importantly, whether they stay connected to the necessary support services to maintain that stability.
That sounds like a really critical indicator of long-term success, breaking the cycle.
Absolutely. Then there's the important tracking of medical, mental health, and recovery services connections.
We talked about how important those are.
Right. Addressing these underlying health and wellness needs is just fundamental for overall stability and long-term housing success. Connecting people with these services can also lead to other positive outcomes.
Like what?
Like potentially reducing reliance on emergency medical services, hospitalizations, which can have pretty substantial cost benefits down the road.
So it's not just shelter, it's holistic care with potential system savings. What about economic stability? Is that tracked?
Yep, that's captured by the metric obtain jobs. Tracking the number of residents who successfully find employment highlights the program's effectiveness in fostering economic independence.
Which is vital for staying housed long term.
Absolutely vital. A key step towards achieving and maintaining that stability.
And finally, the chapter highlighted tracking document readiness. Why is that a key indicator? It seems kind of administrative.
Well, it might seem administrative, but having essential ID and documentation, driver's license, social security card, birth certificate, it's frequently a major barrier for people trying to access permanent housing or various benefits.
Ah, okay. I see.
So tracking document readiness shows how effectively the program is helping residents overcome these bureaucratic hurdles, preparing them for a smoother, more successful transition.
So monitoring all of these interconnected metrics, it really gives a comprehensive picture of the program's overall effectiveness, its impact.
Right.
And the chapter also points out this data isn't just for like filing reports, right? It has real practical uses.
Exactly. That's key.
Yeah.
By consistently tracking and analyzing these metrics, programs can empirically demonstrate their effectiveness, which is absolutely crucial for securing continued funding.
Makes sense. You need proof.
And for fostering ongoing community trust and support. Plus, this data provides invaluable insights.
Insights for what?
For informing operational adjustments, driving continuous program improvements, and ultimately leading to better outcomes for the residents being served.
The chapter even mentioned a 2003 report from HHS as another source for potential data points.
Yes, Department of Health and Human Services. It suggests that the specific metrics tracked can and probably should be tailored.
Tailored to the specific project.
Exactly. To the unique goals, the context of each individual project, the specific demographics being served, the desired outcomes. The key, as the material underscores, is collaboration.
Between who?
Between the housing providers, the service organizations themselves, and the relevant local agencies. Collaboration to ensure the data being collected is accurate, reliable, and truly meaningful for informing both practice and policy.
So it's really not just about crunching numbers. It's about strategically using data to drive actual positive change and maybe inform smarter policy decisions in our efforts to address homelessness.
Precisely. It's about demonstrating the tangible value of these programs and advocating for sustainable long-term solutions that are grounded in data and real-world outcomes.
So to sort of bring it all together then,
Okay. It
seems abundantly clear that these service providers are so much more than just on-site managers. They really are the operational backbone, the vital human element.
Absolutely. That underpins the success of interim supportive housing. Their specialized expertise, those deep, trusting community connections, and their consistent provision of comprehensive, individualized support services. It's all fundamental for empowering people to successfully transition out of homelessness and into stable, permanent housing.
And understanding the critical processes, how they're selected, how they're funded, and really cultivating that strong collaborative partnership early, that seems absolutely non-negotiable for success here.
Without a doubt. And as we've explored, the ongoing collection and, importantly, the insightful analysis of meaningful metrics by these dedicated providers, it's essential, not just for showing impact, but for securing resources and continuously enhancing the effectiveness of these incredibly vital programs.
This deep dive into their multifaceted role, it really shines a light on a crucial and maybe often underappreciated aspect of tackling homelessness effectively. You know, considering the breadth of their responsibilities, the depth of their community engagement, it really makes you wonder, what other innovative ways could their unique expertise and those established networks be leveraged to address the complex challenges of homelessness in maybe different community contexts? Definitely a powerful thought to carry with you. Thanks for taking this deep dive with us.